The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Irene Wright. I'm head of the Children's Department here at the Parkway Central Library. And it's my honor to introduce a very special visitor to our library tonight. Jeff Kinney was born in Fort Washington, Maryland, and attended the University of Maryland in the early 1990s. It was there that Jeff ran a comic strip called IgDoof on the campus newspaper, and he knew he was interested in being a cartoonist. However, Jeff was not successful in getting his comic strip syndicated after college, and in 1998, he started writing down ideas for Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which he hoped to turn into a book. Jeff worked on the book for 6 years before publishing it online on funbrain.com in daily installments. To date, the online version of Diary of a Wimpy Kid has had more than 50 million visits, and it's typically read by more than 100,000 kids a day. In 2006, Jeff signed a multi-book deal with publisher Harry Abrams to turn Diary of a Wimpy Kid into a print series. Diary of a Wimpy Kid was released in April of 2007, and it quickly became a New York Times bestseller and eventually reached the number one spot. It's number two as of this morning and has been on the New York Times bestseller list for 51 weeks. And then the book that you're going to hear about today, which is Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, is number one as of this morning, and has been number one and been on the New York Times bestseller list for 12 weeks. Jeff currently has a full-time job as the design director of a Boston-based internet publishing company, where he helps create online games and multiplayer worlds while writing books in his free time, which he doesn't have much of because he also has a family with two sons and his wife, and they live in southern Massachusetts. So I'm very pleased today to introduce Jeff Kinney.
Hi, thank you so much for coming out here on a Saturday night. It is a Saturday night, right? My head is a little bit lost. We've been to two other places today, and the last one didn't have air conditioning, so it's been quite a ride today. But this is great. This is a nice environment, and everything's very reasonable. So I hope to entertain you for 30 minutes or so. And what I like to do is, let's see if I can find this. We have a few of these. What I like to do is I like to actually have you build your own presentation. Hopefully everything shows up there. But how many of you guys have seen the game show Jeopardy? Yeah, enough to get us started for sure. So I have my presentation built this way, so it kind of keeps me sane because then the presentation goes out of order and it's sort of out of my control. But here are the categories. We have The Incredible Shrinking Book, Spine Out, Digital Ink, Do It Yourself, Spiders in the Basement, Thanks Mom and Dad, Von Idioten Umsengelt, Don't Quit Your Day Job. And if you have any questions for me that you'd like to ask, just raise your hand and ask a question. But let's get started. Who wants to start us off? Way in the back. Yep.
I'm a mom, so I'm going to say Thanks Mom and Dad.
Now, I'll tell you this. I owe everything to my mom and dad, who both started me on the track that I'm on. My mom actually bought me my first computer when I was about 11 or 12 years old, and she had the foresight to see that, the Apple II was going to cause a revolution. And so I think I'm really dating myself there, but, I became a computer programmer. And then the other major influence is my father, who turned me on to comics at a young age. And he didn't turn me on to kind of junk comics, like, things that were very disposable. He turned me on to like great classic comics like the Carl Barks, Donald Duck comics and Uncle Scrooge and things like that from the 1940s and 50s. And it really fostered a love of cartoons in me. And he was with me during the, you know, the real high period of comics when The Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes and Bloom County came out. So anyway, my parents are here tonight. They came up from Maryland. I just wanted to have everybody say hi. Mom and Dad, can you stand up for a second? Yeah, they're right there. Yeah. So I've never, I think I've embarrassed them, but I've never gotten to present in front of my parents, so this is a real treat for me. Hopefully my act is polished enough that they won't critique me afterwards. But anyway, let's have a next category. Yes. We have one kid who just put food in his mouth, so how about the guy without the food? Sure, you have a question. Fire away. The last book is going to come out in what, 2011? I also have my editor here, so Charlie Kochman, he's the one that thought this would be a good idea to make into a book. So, you know, my thanks to him also. Don't worry, there are no more surprise guests. But the next book will come out January 17th. This is like This Is Your Life, right? Where I have the audience. Actually, I have a college roommate here too, which is really funny. So. No more, though, I promise. But the next book will come out on January 17th, I think, of next year. But we have a book that's coming out in between then, so I'll talk to you a little bit about that in a moment. So, yes, with the white hat. Digital ink. Okay, you'll notice I'm using this computer here. It's called a tablet computer, and I'll show you a little bit about it. When I first wrote this book, I wrote it on funbrain.com. How many of you guys have seen that website? Wow, a lot more than usual. That's my day job. That's what I do for my day job is I create games for FunBrain. And when I was publishing this on FunBrain, I actually did about 2,000 drawings. And in each one would take me about 2 hours, even though they're really simple doodles. But it's because I would pencil, I would ink, I would erase my lines, I'd scan the drawings into the computer, and then convert them into a form that could be used on the web. And so when this book was going to be made into a print book, I wanted to draw everything just perfectly, so I knew I had to redraw everything. And so I didn't want to spend, you know, all of those hours doing the illustrations again. So luckily, along came this technology. This is a tablet PC, and I'm able to draw right on the screen. This will be a sloppy drawing because I usually sit with it in my lap, but here we go. I'll give it my best shot. So here's Greg Heffley. You know what? That's pretty sloppy, so luckily you have an undo button. And I always say, don't you wish your life had an undo button? Okay, that's a little bit better. It's a little shaky, but you get the picture. So here you see I can save all of those steps. This is very revolutionary. It's had, you know, this device right here has had a major effect on my life because as was mentioned before, you know, I'm a father, I have a full-time job, and I couldn't do all of these things at once if I didn't have this device right here. You'll notice I left the mouth blank. This is just to show you that almost every drawing of Greg Heffley starts off the same way. Everything is really in that place, in that placement, except for the mouth. So here's, you know, unhappy Greg here. And you can see with just a few flicks of the wrist, you have happy Greg, and you can have all sorts of other permutations here. So here we go. Here's a gritting your teeth kind of Greg. I subscribe to a school of thought in cartooning of minimalism. Boy, I sound pretentious. Remember, I was not accepted by any cartoon syndicates, and now I get to stand on this stage and tell you what school of thought I subscribe to. Anyway, in cartooning, there's this cartoonist from the 1900s who had a quote that I love. He said his editor challenged him to use half as many lines in his cartoons. And he said, if I use half as many lines, I'd have to charge you twice as much. And so I really like that. I like to use only the minimum amount of information to show you what the character is thinking and feeling. And so I'll show you, I'll give you an example of that. Here we'll have another shaky line. So right here, can a kid tell me what Greg is doing right there? I see a guy with his hand up. Let's. He's speaking, right? I'd say he might be shouting, something like that. But again, you know that just from those little lines. You know, that really helps you out. That tells you what he's feeling. So here we go. How about this? It doesn't tell you what he's feeling. It tells you what he's doing. But in this case, it tells you what he's feeling. That guy right there. He's getting worried, right? He's feeling nervous about something. But when you get nervous, do little beads of water fly off of your head? No. But kids know these things. And like I said, my editor's in the room, so I'll mention this, is that here's a little symbol that I use all the time in the book, right? Can you tell me what the character's feeling? This girl over here? Frustrated, right? Yeah, anybody else? Confused, and you said what? Upset, right? He's angry, right? And my editor doesn't say this, but other people on the publishing team say this. They say, why do all the characters have these little tornadoes above their heads? So I like to say, you know, a kid just knows. Nobody ever sat them down and told them these things. They just kind of know. And that's what I love about cartooning, is that you can express yourself so efficiently. So that is my section on digital ink. And I'll show you something else. That the way that Greg draws girls and boys is very different. Here are some girls from the book Roderick Rules, and here are some boys, right? You notice that they're drawn very differently. And now, ignore the fact for a moment that the boys are happy and the girls were angry, but how are they drawn differently? How about a girl? Yep. Right behind you, yep. The girls do look angry, right? Yes. Let's get this guy over here. Yeah. The girls are more thin. That's right. And the boys have some width to them, right? Anything else? I see a little girl right there. That's true. That's true. And I want to give her a chance to say that again. Some of the girls what? Look like boys, did you say? Oh, that's true. I think that's a testament to my bad artistry and not any message that I'm trying to put in. But you'll notice that the boys look wildly different from one another. They have these crazy noses, crazy hair, crazy teeth, and different widths. And the girls all really look the same. The only thing that really changes is the hair, right? And so remember, this book is being drawn not by me, but by Greg Heffley. So why might Greg have drawn the girls all looking the same? Yeah? Because he likes girls, that might be a part of it, right? Yeah? He likes one girl and draws them all like her, maybe? Yeah? Way in the back, you're going to have to yell, bud. Because he writes about everyday experiences, yes? Well, I think that the reason that he draws all the girls the same is because he thinks of girls as all being the same, right? All Greg really knows about girls is that, you know, they travel in packs and they go to the bathroom in pairs, right? And he doesn't understand them past that. So this is a message that I'm trying to use as a cartoonist to tell you, you know, what Greg is thinking about the other characters in the book. So Greg doesn't really get girls yet. He doesn't have the maturity to understand them. But, you know, the boys, you know, he gets these guys. So that's why they all look different from one another. So just another mention about something, a design choice. Yeah? I get called on this all the time. I actually, you know, one of the things I do is I manage Funbrain, and we've had coming soon on one of the games for about 3 years. Basically ever since I started doing Diary of a Wimpy Kid, so we'll see. It's coming soon though. It's under construction. Yeah. Fire away. This happens to me all the time, so no worries. We're having some intense negotiations down there. It's okay, bud. You want to just raise your hand again if you remember it, okay? No problem. Way in the back with your hand raised high. Striped shirt, yeah? Spiders in the basement. Now, we're in Philadelphia, right? So a lot of people here must live in old houses. Is that true? How many people here live in a house that's more than 50 years old? Yeah, that's a lot. How about more than 150 years old? There can't be more hands up than last time. That's not fair. I live in a house that's about 200 years old. I live in Plainville, Massachusetts, and I work and live in an old farmhouse. It actually wasn't even a house. It didn't even rise to that level. It was a horse and carriage, I guess it was stable or something like that, where I work. My basement is actually a remodeled area where the horse was kept, and there are even hooks on the walls and everything. And this is where I wrote the book originally. And what I would do is, you know, I mentioned spiders in the basement because there's all sorts of creepy crawlies that live down there with me. But what I would do is every night at about 3 in the morning, I would post a new entry on FunBrain. And right away, like within minutes, sometimes less than minutes, I'd get a response, emails from people from all over the world who read what I just wrote. And emails from China and Pakistan, Greece, people who were kind of waiting for the next entry and then read it right when right after I wrote it. And it was really cool. And I was thinking, you know, what a cool thing, what a cool world we live in now that you can broadcast to the world from your basement in Plainville, Massachusetts, you know, to the world. And I think kids today will grow up, you know, taking this for granted. But, of course, this is all brand new to people in my generation and older. And I think about pen pal relationships when I was growing up is that, if you got two letters back and forth in the course of a year, that was like a really good pen pal relationship. So things have changed a lot, but what a great thing that people can really broadcast to their world from their own computer. And so I've had a lot of fun with that and a lot of success. So that's cool. I thought I'd mention it. Okay. Yes, right there. Do it yourself. This is brand new. We are actually right now working on, and you were just clearing that column, weren't you? I didn't see where this was going. Yeah. Isn't that arrogant to make the treat, the reward, be the view of the next book? Yeah, you can see right here that this is the last straw. We're working on it now. We've got it in rough draft form. And I say we because my editor is sitting right here. It's going to come out on January 17th of next year. And they're going to, I think they're going to do what's called a lay down, which means, you know, they're going to have the boxes in the stores and open them up at midnight and have people, you know, there to get the book. So it's cool. Again, very arrogant and presumptuous, but, you know, I figure, you know, Harry Potter had all those like kids dressed up as wizards, and I'll have, all these wimpy, you know, scrawny kids lined up with like, you know, bad posture. But we weren't talking about that. We were talking about the do-it-yourself book. This is actually brand new. Let's see if I can draw this up. Because January 17th is a long way from now, we're doing this thing called the Diary of a Wimpy Kid do-it-yourself book, which is not a cash-in move at all. It's half of a real book and half of a blank journal. It's kind of like it's almost, I don't want to say activity book, but it's something to encourage kids to write in, to make their own comics and to kind of interact with the characters in the book. And I mention this because I'm not shilling, hopefully not too much, but what I really wanted to mention it because we were really surprised with Diary of a Wimpy Kid that how much it touched the reluctant readers. And when I started getting emails, from teachers who said, you know, my reluctant reader loves this book, my reluctant reader. And I remember bringing those emails to my boss and saying, look at that. Isn't that funny? The second person, the third person used that same curious turn of phrase, which I had never heard before. And I've come to understand that reluctant readers just means boys. So we're trying to make some reluctant writers as well or something like that. So it's sort of like the My Book About Me for the sixth grade set. So, how about the next question? Right dead center there with the glasses. Yep. What's that? Oh, The Incredible Shrinking Book. Okay, great. So this is, I wanted to talk about how I started the book. Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't know why people were laughing. This is the first time I've done this presentation, so it's all new to me, too. When I got the idea for this book, I wanted to just dive right in and start writing it. You know, I said, oh, I've got an idea. I'm just going to start tearing into it. But what I decided to do was I said, you know what, I'm going to slow down. And I bought this sketchbook. And I said, I'll slow down and I'm going to fill this thing up with ideas before I start actually writing the real book. And so at first, things went really well. I know you can't see this, but we've got a great projector up here. Great. So you can see there that this is where a lot of the characters were born, actually. Here's the first picture of Rowley. And you can see he looks nothing like Rowley looks now. Maybe the face looks right. And, you know, here's one of the first pictures of Greg, and he changed a lot, too. So I decided to fill up this book, and at first things were going really well. I could do about maybe three or four of these a night. And I said, you know, I'll have this done in a few weeks. Anyway, that, like I said, that was about 10 years ago and a month now, so you can see where this is headed. By the end, that's what my pages look like. So it took me about maybe 4 months to do just one page at the end. And then what I did was I cut out all these little strips of paper, and I was going to put them on magnets and put them on the refrigerator to kind of reorder everything into the order for the book. And then I realized after doing some simple math that it would take 8 refrigerators to fill this up. So I went right out to Home Depot. So I had to do it another way. But you can see that it took me an awfully long time. And actually, at the end, I had about 13,000 pages worth of material, which I slimmed down to 1,300 pages for Funbrain, and those 1,300 pages became just 217 pages for a book. So there's a lesson there, I think. One is don't take 10 years to write a book, but the other is maybe don't go with your first idea because you know you'll get a much better result if you're kind of patient. So, all right, yes. Yes, I did, and that's a shameful secret that won't be spoken of again. I wanted to hand draw the whole book. You know, I wanted to write everything out, and in fact, I intended to do that. But then you get your edits back from your editor. And then, you know, you have to change huge blocks of text, move things around, and so it just wouldn't have been practical to handwrite the whole book. And so I created a font. Yes, I did. Okay, this guy right here. There's a brave guy, Von Idioten Umsengeld. And you can see the back cover of the book isn't designed yet. But this is what it looks like in Photoshop, is when you have the whole thing spread out. That's what it looks like. Von Idioten Umsengeld, I think is how it's pronounced. And luckily, I haven't had any German speakers confront me on that. But the book is being translated into 22 languages now. Some languages I'd never even heard of. How many people here have heard of Catalan? A few adults. And a few kids who are fibbing. Catalan. But I didn't even know what it meant. And then they send me the cover or the title and say, is this okay in the Catalan version? And I'm like, I didn't even know the language existed. How can I say it's not okay? But we're finding out all sorts of surprising things. One of the more interesting things is we got an email from one country, and they said, you know, we can't run this book in our country because the characters have 4 fingers. And they said, which is very common in cartooning, by the way, but they said that, you know, hundreds of years ago, there was a class of people that was discriminated against, and they were called all sorts of awful names, including the 4-fingered people. And to this day, their ancestors are on the lookout for any evidence of discrimination against their ancestors. And so it's very interesting. And then, so they politely asked that we could add a 5th finger. All sorts of issues like that are coming up. In the German edition, it's called Von Idioten Umsengeld. And I guess this is useless to hold this up because it looks an awful lot like the real book. But they said to us, you know, we can't name this thing Diary of a Wimpy Kid. They said, because we don't have a word for wimpy in German. So I want to live in a country like that. Actually, I don't think I'd fit in. It actually translates into Greg's journal, I'm Surrounded by Idiots. So we just got the Swedish version back, the title, and they called it, it's awful. They called it Greg's Journal to All His Fans, : Greg's List of Accomplishments. It's like, you know, a government-instituted title or something. You know, it's really awful, but it was too late to change it. When it doesn't work, you know, in Sweden, we will know why, I think. But, yes, right here. Yes. You will have to buy the book to find out. Greg is pinned up against the wall in his underwear. It's a long story, but this is the last straw. And in the book, Greg's dad is, he wants to shape Greg up and send him to military school. And events lead to this, Greg being pinned up against a wall in his underwear in a hotel. And I really don't want to ruin it by saying why. Okay, right there, bud. spine out. This is just something very interesting. It's really actually, you know, success is very hard to come by. And, you know, I learned that from trying to get my work published, and I just couldn't get anybody to get interested. But it's even harder when you become an author. And one of the interesting things about being an author is that you, you know, your book comes out and you go to every bookstore. You know, you try to see where they're shelving it, and you're very excited. And when I first went to my first bookstore, it was under a giant sign that said, books for girls, right? And in another store, it was under a sign that said, warriors. So I have no idea why. But, you know, when you go there, they shelve it. When you finally do see your book on the shelves, it's shelves spine out, right? And so this is all that the world sees of your book cover. You know, that's it. And you've got, like, most bookstores will order, like, four if, you know, they're really feeling like they want to take a big risk. So, you know, this is your face to the world. So a lot of authors, like myself, you know, you can't resist going by a bookstore when you're driving through the neighborhood. And so you go and you turn them all face out, right? Which covers up the two unfortunate people in the, you know, who are next to you in the alphabet. But I guarantee you, like, on every border security cam, there's, like, you know, Stephen King or whoever going like this, right? And my dad's here. I think my father has personally turned, like, maybe 50,000 books face out. And it's funny because you say, you know, very naively, you say, well, you know, why don't they just put it in the front of the store? Then it would sell, you know, and you don't realize that that costs money, you know. So it's hard. And then the window is very, very small, is that you have really a few weeks before the bookstore will say, okay, it's not selling, you know, or it only sold one copy, and then they'll turn them back, you know, they'll return them to the publisher. So it's really hard, and I feel really lucky. I lucked out. But, you know, for any author, everybody, I think, goes through that same process. Okay, I'm going to try to get somebody really far away. Way in the back with the orange shirt. You've been raising your hand. Yeah? You're going to have to yell, though. My inspiration for Greg Heffley? I wanted to write about what I think is the toughest time in anybody's life, which is middle school. And, you know, that's a place where some kids are literally twice the size of others, you know. You'll never run into a situation in your life again where it's that, you know, those are the circumstances. But middle school, I think it's kind of an underappreciated time. It's great for comedy because there's so much, going on. There's so much danger. But I'll mention this is that, you know, no kid ever, no adult ever says, you know, boy, I really miss my middle school days. You know, those were the good old days, you know. So if you're in middle school and you're doing all right now, that's great. And if you're not, like, you know, everybody else, then it's going to get a lot better, trust me. So I just wanted to write about a character that was in that terrible situation. Yeah? Don't quit your day job. So this is to show you, and there we go, there's the cover of The Last Straw. This is to show you what I do actually in my day job and why I like my day job. But I actually create massively multiplayer online role-playing games for kids. And this is called Poptropica. And it's a new evolution of Funbrain. But I just want to show you something really quick. Let's see if this works. I tried this the other day and it didn't work. I was so embarrassed. Let's see. It's loading. All right. So this is Poptropica, and it's this virtual world that you can explore, and you can talk to other people in this world and play head-to-head games against other kids. And what's really exciting about it is that you can get these things that are like digital objects. You know, this is very iPod-esque, but there are these things that feel like physical things. For example, you know, here's a calculator that really works, and, you know, that kind of a thing. Hopefully it shows 9. But also, you know, you can take things that you wouldn't expect to be in this form and really stretch the model. So here's, you know, an online book in this form. So it really mimics the real thing. And so this is one of the reasons, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid started off online, and I've really benefited from having been published online. And I'd like to bring other authors into, you know, to have them get as much exposure as I have. And so this is why I like what I do in my full-time job. And I'd like to make both things work out for as long as possible. Oh, thank you very much. I bring that guy with me everywhere I go, actually. He was late on the queue. He was supposed to do that when I showed the cover. Yeah, right there.
When's the movie coming out?
I've made an agreement with Fox 2000 to make a Diary of a Wimpy Kid movie. So we'll see how it goes. I have no idea what to expect. Thank you. Yes, right here. Is Paul a character? And this is one of my college roommates or hallmates. He might be. There might be a Paul joke in there somewhere. I'll let you know if I can think of one. With the orange shirt? Yep. Yeah, he's going to call me out. Flop sweat, you know. Let's talk afterwards. Okay, you're right there. This is turning into a Poptropica seminar. What games can you do? There's all sorts of games, and there are lots of multiplayer and head-to-head type games, and then some games that you can play by yourself. You can play Sudoku. Oh, you want to see it right there? I don't think the button is right there. All right, I will close this. My apologies. Sorry, that wasn't punishment. It was just I wanted you to see this again. So why don't we do three or four more questions? And this guy remembered his. So you want to yell it out? It's true, but keep your eyes peeled because it's coming soon. Yep, right there with the navy blue shirt. Again, we'll talk. All right, one wimpy quick kid question, then we'll start signing books. How about that? All right, right over there with the glasses. Yep. No, I'm actually planning 5 books. So thank you very much. I'd really like to do as many books as I can keep coming up with good ideas for. I think that everything, every property, every comic or sitcom has a lifespan to it, and the good people realize when that lifespan is over. And for Seinfeld, it was 8 years. For me, I feel like it's 5 books. So hopefully I'll be able to do 5 good books and then maybe push it on past that. So I think that we're going to hand it over, and I don't know the organization of the signing, but if you have any questions for me during the signing, I'd be happy to answer them for you. And I'm going to turn it over to this gentleman. Thank you again.
Folks, thank you very much for coming. The way this is going to work is we're going to escape out the back way. There will be a line forming, line forming down the hallway. And if you'd like a book personalized, we'll have somebody put a sticky in it for you. So we'll see you upstairs in a couple of minutes.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.